envy thrives among peers. We will not be talking about envying the lifestyles of the rich and famous in this book. The brand of envy we are dealing with is more of a backyard envy, born and bred at home. It's the kind of envy that interrupts brotherly love and wreaks havoc on fellowship in the church. Envy in the pews and at the office and between friends. This is the kind of malice Paul talked about in his laundry list of sins that plague the natural man. It's hard to feel this kind of malice for someone you've never met. The other person needs to be close enough to you that you feel a rivalry with him or her. Jesus knew this. "A prophet is not without honor," he observed once, "except in his hometown and among his relatives and in his own household." Mark chapter 6, verse 4. He recognized that glory burns more when it is close enough to touch you. He knew that when you've watched a person grow up from diapers, you'll have a hard time accepting his power when he comes into it. Another strange thing about envy: people usually envy things they already have in some measure. If you've been called smart, you're more likely to envy genius. If you've got a car, you're more likely to want a nicer car than another man who has no car at all. A pretty woman is usually more envious of a beautiful woman than a plain-looking woman. A dog would never have grasped for God's power and knowledge the way Satan and Eve did. Nor could it have. It was precisely Satan and Eve's borrowed glory that made them capable of recognizing glory, valuing it, and ultimately falling over it. Envy comes with a feeling of inferiority. In Screwtape Proposes a Toast, C.S. Lewis writes about the relationship between inferiority and envy. "No man who says, 'I'm as good as you,' believes it. He would not say it if he did. The Saint Bernard never says it to the toy dog, nor the scholar to the dunce, nor the employable to the bum, nor the pretty woman to the plain. The claim to equality, outside the strictly political field, is made only by those who feel themselves to be in some way inferior. What it expresses is precisely the itching, smarting, writhing awareness of inferiority which the patient refuses to accept. This writhing, itching awareness is at the heart of envy. The inferiority is sometimes only a felt inferiority on the part of the envier, but in all cases, a sense of inferiority is there. And it hurts, as Screwtape would say, like hell. Envy is destructive rather than motivational. Strange thing, envy is more interested in getting rid of the other person's advantage than in acquiring it for itself. In a complete demonic reverse of logic, the envious person believes that it would be better for no one to have it than for another person to have it while he himself goes without. Think of the two women who came to Solomon with one live baby and one dead baby. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 16 through 28. They both claimed the live one was theirs, that the other woman had rolled over her baby in the middle of the night and killed it. Solomon's job was to figure out which woman was telling the truth, and in the end, he relied on a basic understanding of envy to tell him. He ordered the live baby cut in half and given to both women. The first woman said, "All right, so be it, kill the kid." The second said, no, let this woman have the baby, only let it live." Solomon understood the human heart. He knew that a true mother would jump to stop the barbarism because she would do anything to save her baby's life, including giving...